from MLU headquarters in Philadelphia.
You should go underneath it.
Oh, way out deep!
This is Cleats and Cuffy.
Hit it! Oh, what a hit that was! Murray!
Everything ultimate, from the field to the boardroom, with Jeff Snyder and Nick Dark.
Hang it up there!
Nicholas, how are you this fine afternoon, 2 days before the season starts?
2 days? Are we saying 2 days? It's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Is that two or three?
We just got to get through Thursday and Friday, and then Saturday's the day. So it's Saturday's 2 days in a wake-up.
2 days in a wake-up.
Yeah.
2 days in a wake-up. I'm good. This is another episode of Cleats and Cufflinks. At this point, we've gotten far enough in that we have no idea what number we're on.
600. Is there 600?
Episode 600.
Yeah. I'm proud of it. Proud to get
it. We're going to have a little celebration.
Yeah.
A little celebration of that later.
No. So we're about to enter into the 2015 season. This is our third season. And I think we could agree that in some ways, this feels like we've been doing this forever. In other ways, it feels like we are still brand new at this whole thing.
Yeah. I would say that's accurate. I think that looking back, I feel like this season is always, I just want to say bless you to the person who just walked outside by us. I don't know if any of you picked that up on the microphones, but it was hard to ignore. Bless you.
That was quite a sneeze.
Okay.
So people might not know. No, we recorded our last episode in here.
We did our last episode here, but we're in the new offices now, completely different recording scenario. Obviously good audio from the street.
Of course.
Here. Which is a little bit different, but by and large, I think a better situation.
Yeah, this is wild. We've probably said it before, but we went from working in a garage, no, in a coffee shop, to a garage, to an apartment, to a pretty freaking awesome 3,000 square foot office. So
yeah, this place is great. We've been able to do a lot of stuff in here we could not have done otherwise, and we're going to continue to push those boundaries in the coming weeks.
And we're almost growing out of this darn place. So what is that?
Yeah, when our college interns show up, it's going to get downright crowded in here. Yeah,
well, yesterday you and I had to have or 2 days ago, we had to have a conference call in the stairwell.
Yeah. That's conference room three.
Conference room three.
Conference room three is the stairwell.
So. Now, the fans out there, anyone who wrote to either of us and said, when the heck are you doing another Cleats and Cufflinks? Well, we're back.
We are doing it.
And we're going to do this hopefully much more consistently throughout the season. We promise that all the time, but it is not as easy to get these recordings down. But, you know, we love talking to you guys, so we want to do them.
Yeah. We used to always make this joke about you being tired of seeing me. That was kind of a recurring Cleats and Cufflinks joke. Yeah. And now I think I hit days where I kind of miss you.
I know.
Like it's gone the other way around. We don't see each other as much.
I miss you too,
really,
and
directly.
I hate to say it. I mean, I hate that I miss you, and I also hate you.
Yeah, that's upsetting.
So
yeah,
but
that's
so
true.
We got some good stuff to talk about.
We have some great stuff to talk about today, right on the eve of the season, as we'll call it.
One thing is the accessibility of Ultimate Frisbee, and an epiphany we had about it.
Yeah, epiphany seems strong, but yeah, I mean, more as it applies to are thinking about the high school game.
Right.
And about high school ultimate.
Okay. And the second one is, so we're going to talk about that because we've realized some things and some things really came to light that we wanted to talk about our vision for growth of the sport, helping out high schools, colleges, all those things, get more Ultimate Frisbee programs. Second is MLU Fantasy.
Yeah.
This was an idea that we had, since the beginning, everybody wants Fantasy Ultimate.
Well, what's funny is before this application, MLU Fantasy meant to me the dream of the MLU being successful. and now we've apparently hit a point where we're kind of doing okay. And now it apparently means something different.
Yeah.
Fantasy sports, something like that. Yeah.
I mean, we had a fantasy app both of our first two seasons.
We did. Yeah.
And no knock against it. It was neat.
No, it was with the Ulti Apps guys, and they did a great job putting that together sort of on the fly.
Yeah, they did a fine job. Yep. There's no complaints, but we had a much bigger vision for how it should be. And some crazy pieces came together and we have something. So we wanted to talk to you about the business side of why create a fantasy app and then give you a little insight into how it's doing and how we did some things. So that's number 2.
Yeah, that's going to be fun.
And then number 3, we wanted to say, from our point of view, what were the top five things that were or the top five greatest things we've done for this season, right?
The top five things we're most happy about coming into this season.
Right.
As compared to previous seasons.
And then the top five things we want. We're also going to say that. What are the top five things we're looking to do?
Yeah.
Which that's a list of 500.
Yeah. Oh, man. And that it just keeps cycling through the top five. We keep moving things off of the top five list of things we want and onto the top five things that we're happy about.
Yeah.
And it's never going
to
end.
Yeah. And you could probably ask us the top five things we want in 6 months and they'd be different.
Oh, absolutely. Right?
So with that, you know, shall we get how you been?
You know, I've been good. I turned 37 a few days ago.
So can we talk about?
Oh, you want to talk about that?
I wasn't planning
on this. Pretty good.
But you.
Let's start with this. First of all, Jeff, who's known me for many a year and who has Facebook, and LinkedIn, mm-hmm. both of which prominently list my birthday. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, still thought my birthday was April 1st.
My Google Calendar says Nick Darling born on April 1st.
Yeah, yeah.
So
April Fool's on you.
On me. So we played an April Fool's joke on Nicholas, for all those out here. There was a discussion in-house about what would really get Nick, right? And we really wanted to sit down and think about it. And I'm going to give it to Jonathan McQueen, because he said we should just do an all-out, like a massive quitting. Everybody should just quit. And I said, Nick will never believe that everyone just quit. But he will believe if I go off on a rant and start screaming at everybody that they would quit from that.
Yeah, yeah. And if there's one thing that could make everyone here quit or continue working, it's Jeff.
You're right. So, I get to say this because I'm very proud of this, that I, when we scripted this out, and you know this, I said how you would react to the T in every instance. I knew you too well, my friend.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
So here's what we did. We knew that Nick would be in a meeting with Austin
Benelli, who is not in on this, by the way.
He's not in on this.
Yeah.
We knew he'd be in on a meeting. So what we did was we went and, because if you're going to play an April Fool's joke, you always have a treat. So we went and got you a nice...
Lafroig 18.
Oof, that's a scotch.
Oh my goodness!
And you're not going to tell me it wasn't worth it.
So much peat.
Yeah.
So much peat. It's like all of Scotland was on fire in my face.
Yeah. I guess that's good.
I'm going to take it as
I would
good.
Just say it tasted.
It was delicious.
So he's in there working. Everybody's set up. Everybody knows what's going on. I start barking a bit at Jonathan and walk into Nick's meeting, somewhat interrupting, and I'm acting upset.
Yeah.
Jonathan then comes in and says, can we talk? And I said, I don't want to talk now. He goes, we need to go right now. We storm off.
You said, can't you handle this yourself?
That was good.
And he's like, no, I need to talk to you now.
Now.
In his Jonathan way.
So we go into the conference room. The biggest smiles on our face ever, but we are screaming at each other. Jonathan, after 15 seconds of screaming, walks out and goes, that's it. I've had enough. Who's coming with me?
It was also like a 1950s television fight. There was stuff breaking. I think I heard a cat at one point.
So then the sales guys go, we're going with you. And they storm out. The brilliance of this, though, is that Matt Gray understood then came out with his production crew, the video guys, so three of them, and said, Jeff, what are you doing? This is 15 days before the season, for which I said, Matt, get out of my face. So Matt then goes, I can't take this, and he leaves. So now we've had seven people quit in 10 seconds, right?
The language may have been a bit more colorful. This is the podcast rated version of this.
So then I knew that Nick would just sit in the conference room and not do much, but he walked out just to check. I then, you know, I'm storming around. Nick goes back in the conference room, and I knew I could seal it with one thing, which was flipping a table over. So I flipped a table over, which also turned out to be an April Fool's joke on Billy Sickles because he had organized all these T-shirts and they were no longer organized.
Yeah, we have a bunch of Skippy T-shirts, which if you come to a game this year, sit in the right fan section, get yourself some Skippy peanut butter T-shirts. That's going to be fantastic.
That's true. And we can get you some free Skippy peanut butter too. You should be listening to this.
Yeah, you should be. Keep an eye on that.
Now, everybody is now mad and we all walk upstairs. But I knew Nick would never, ever go upstairs to follow us or to intervene in any way. So we're all upstairs.
I just kept working.
Yeah.
Austin and I were just designing programs. Yeah.
There's nobody left in the office but Austin and Nick. Everybody's upstairs. And then we knew exactly what to do. Ian goes downstairs with Luke. and says, Nick.
And Jackie Freeman was with him too, yeah.
They said, Nick, you have to go upstairs. They're about to come to blows, right? They're about to fight. So Nick opens up the door upstairs. We're all in the lobby of our office. And everyone's holding me and Jonathan back. And Nick has this face of like, why are you fighting?
Why do I have
what
to
is going on? You're grown men. He comes up to me and goes, Jeff, come on. Let's just come downstairs. I think you're just trying to get me out of it. And I smile and say, April Fools. And you fell to your knees, man. It had you 100%. It had you 100%.
And here's the thing. Is I don't know whether that is credit to you for putting together such a nice April Fool's joke or incredibly worrying because that was so believable.
Oh, man. So there's two lessons there. One is go into business with someone you can torture.
Yep.
And two is go into business with someone you can torture.
There are two lessons. Those are important.
It makes you feel good. But I will say, lesson two is you always bring a gift. We gave you an 18-year-old scotch, and it all made it great, and we all had a good laugh.
I was literally, by the time I – because you knew me. I'm not going to get up right away and get involved. Mm-hmm. It's going to take a lot of working up. So mm-hmm. by the time I actually got up to do it, I was so angry. And so worked up. Jackie is walking up the stairs behind me, hearing me mumbling, kids, babies, children, why not babies? Tired of this baby stuff. I'm trying to get work done right away. Yeah. And by the time you guys told me, I was shaky for like half an hour afterwards. And all this adrenaline that had nowhere to go.
Man. I'll have that with me forever. So I think I want that on my tombstone. Got Nick April 1st, 2015.
Yeah, I've never had an April Fool's joke pulled on me before, and I hope it never happens again. But I did enjoy that one.
Is that true, though? Because you got an 18-year-old bottle of scotch.
Actually, yeah, I want that to happen every year.
I started thinking, that's true.
The reward is good. The reward is good.
It's not that. It's like 15 minutes of pain for 18-year-old scotch. It's like 18 years of scotch.
18 years of scotch.
Gotten in 15 minutes.
In 15 minutes. Yep. It's not bad.
Okay. Let us move in or move on.
We're going to move on.
Or move through.
We're going to move in and on.
We've been talking with lots of people about high school ultimate frisbee, college ultimate frisbee.
Yeah, to put it in context too, so we're going to talk about high school ultimate right now. But I wanted to put a little context in front of it. Somebody asked us the other day in an interview. They said, you know, we hear a lot of buzz about maybe ultimate could someday be a D1 sport in college. Maybe you can get to the Olympics. You know, how do you feel that the MLU is contributing to this? And, you know, there are, of course, a bunch of ways we are. You know, I think the professionalization of the sport is important, all these other stuff. But the biggest thing for me is in order to effectively move the conversation forward on the college level and on the Olympic level and even on the professional level, we need to be a significant part of building high school ultimate. Because it's hard to say no to starting college programs when you have tons and tons of high school students demanding them. And so that's the context for our conversation. So we've been talking a lot about high school ultimate, and I'll let you take it from there.
Well, and I love what you're saying too, because you think about what would a college do? Take any college, if 150 students or 250 students come in and say we want an ultimate frisbee team, and we want to be included in the program here. We want to be treated just like any other college program, and the college would say, okay. Whoa, you know, we can't afford that. Like, what can't you afford, right? Because there's so many, like, you have all the fields, you have all the equipment, and there's, like, all these great arguments towards it. And we've talked about that, how Ultimate Frisbee is so easy to play. So it's like, there's nobody that can't play Ultimate Frisbee right now. But something we hit with was that Ultimate Frisbee is not cheap at the moment, right? That was the problem.
And
it's not even easy.
We had never really thought about it this way either, because we are thinking about it in the context of, we talk about it all the time. When we're pitching people on Ultimate and we're explaining the sport to them, it's like soccer, right? It's this universally accessible sport that everyone can play because all it takes is a disc. And there's nothing that's not true about that. That's correct. All it takes is a disc. That's why it's played in 80 countries. That's why a ton of people have picked it up. But why after all these years of ultimate being a sport and of people playing it, has it not been legitimized in terms of being a varsity sport, in terms of being a Division I college sport, all these other things? And this, what we found out recently from a good friend of ours in Vermont, is there is a problem.
Right. And The problem is, and she said it perfectly, it was Ann Monson out of Vermont, right? She said,
you'll remember from an interview we did, Ann Watson, working on Varsity Ultimate in Vermont.
Awesome. A trailblazer in many ways, in lots of ways. I can't remember what it said in the email. She said something. It turns out Ultimate Frisbee isn't as cheap to play as everybody says, because there's all these things that are associated with tournaments. And it was, and both you and I were like, yes, that you have one huge problem, which is that the only way to play right now, the only way it's put together, is in tournament fashion, which is incredibly difficult to run compared to a game.
Yeah, it's not the equipment. It's not the facilities. It's the competitive format right now that is a challenge for high schools who would like to adopt Ultimate programs.
I knocked over a cup.
The competitive format is the thing that's the big challenge in terms of adopting Ultimate. So we talked, you know, we've been going back and forth with Ann, particularly up in Vermont, who's struggling with this right now. They have, in Vermont, Ultimate has been accepted as a trial varsity program. Mm-hmm. And now, as one of the facilitators of this, she has to go to her school and say, all right, here's what we need to be involved in the competitive landscape of Ultimate in the state as a varsity program. And unfortunately, what she's going to them with is not simple. What she's going to them with is, we have to go to these tournaments, and we have to get our kids there, we have to feed them, we have to pay the tournament fees, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it turns out that in the end, that adds up to a way bigger chunk of change than schools are used to forking out for the programs that they support.
And logistics.
And the logistics.
So we made a little list here of things to compare, because it's important to look at this and see how things are used to being done right now, and why, you know, sometimes the way things are, they're hard to get away from, but why the way things are right now is holding things back in many ways, right? So one is fields. In a tournament, we all know that fields are many times lower quality because you need a big field. The amount of times I've played in tournaments on a really, really nice field is way smaller than the amount of times I've played on a nice field, or the, you know, our pro leagues play on nice fields. I mean, that's obviously, it's unfair to compare.
That's obvious.
But still, the point is, if this pro league played tournaments, we wouldn't have access to the same type of field.
Because absolutely.
You need bigger fields, and you need them for a long period of time, and that way you're going to get lower quality fields, and they're going to cost something, right?
You need a huge amount of space. So if you look at, I put this in context of other high school sports I've played, right? When I was growing up, the facilities are there all around a high school. They have fields for soccer, for lacrosse, for football, all the sports that they existing mm-hmm. that are existing in the field. But if you're hosting a tournament, you can't host it at the high school. There's just not enough field space. So they often end up at facilities that are structured to support different types of programs.
Much farther away, usually, too. It's always a travel thing. But actually, I don't want to jump ahead. So let's just go with fields. Fields, tournaments, you're usually getting lower quality, costly fields. Whereas if you played a single game, you're getting a higher quality, or pretty much you say a very good quality, too, not just higher than bad. Like, it's a good quality field at no cost. The school already owns it. So that's one. So right there, you've made cost go down by playing one single game. Now, the next one is food that she brought up.
Right.
And all these things. So, hey, when we go to tournaments, we have to feed the kids. We have to give them all this thing. That is a requirement of tournaments. You have to take care of them. With food, you have to bring them the bagels, the bananas. You have to really prepare. It's a full day of hosting a bunch of kids. Whereas a single game, you don't have to provide them any of that except water.
Absolutely, yeah. When you're getting into a situation where you're taking kids for 1 or 2 days to an off-site facility and you're managing them and holding on to them for an entire game, you're going to run into logistical problems in terms of just taking care of them, keeping them fed.
So now we have food. So we've taken that out of the equation. We now take the cost down. Let's talk about the physicalness.
Physicalness.
That word.
It's the. I think what you're going for is the sort of physical stress of a tournament.
Right. How much? What it demands for the athletes, which is worth thinking about. Which in a tournament, in 2 days, you could play 4 to 8 games. But in a single game format, you're usually playing 1 to 2 games a week. So it's less demanding. And you can ask any one of the MLU athletes, because they've all played tons all throughout the years. And they say that a tournament's really, really tough on the body. Right? It's much tougher, because if you get injured in game one, you know you're going to play game two. And, you know, let's not talk about injured. If you have the beginnings of an injury, you're going to stress it. You're going to push it. It's just the nature of the beast, which is, you know, it's just a hard sport to play when you do that. So now we're taking down the demands on the body.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that endurance kind of thing, I don't think. I just think that in terms of a young, developing athlete, particularly when you get down into the, you know, 14, 15, 16-year-olds, where your body's still developing, you're still developing your strength and your durability, a tournament sort of format is certainly going to add additional stress, particularly when played at a highly competitive level.
Definitely. Now, so, you know, and we'll leave that one as just as a note. We'll say that that's no different here. They're just different. No better, no worse. Travel. Here's the interesting one. Travel for a tournament means you have to get however many kids from however many teams all out to one location. And this is something the high school is not going to pay for most of the time. It's on a weekend, right? Their tournament can't happen on Thursday and Friday after school. This is on a weekend. Mm-hmm. So, and it's not at the school. It's not at a school. So you have to pay for this travel. Someone has to pay for the travel outside of a normal, what's the word I'm looking for? Like the normal process for running an event. If it's at the school, if Marple Newtown is playing Plymouth White Marsh, one school doesn't have to travel at all because they're playing at their field, and the other school gets on a bus as normal through what the, you know, through what a school is used to doing to transport athletes, getting them there for a couple hours and then bringing them back home, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of times, like, not understanding the you know, situation with bus drivers, et cetera, completely, I can still say this. I remember going to games in high school when you had an away game, and you get on a bus. The bus driver would drive you to the game. He'd wait for 2 hours while you played. You get back on the bus, he'd drive you home, right? And often it was an actual bus driver from the school. So I'm assuming they're paying them overtime during the week to stick around and transport people for the game. And they take them there, and then they bring them back, right? Very simple equation. Whereas if you're going to a tournament where you're there for 8 hours, you can't bring a bus there, sit there, wait for 8 hours, and then bring kids back. It's a logistical problem.
And the other problem there is, now there's a direct cost here. The other problem is you have to get people to drive these kids. You're making it harder. Right, we're just making things harder. You're saying, okay, now we need to get drivers, we need to get parents. So all these things that make it more difficult and make it make putting and organizing it more tough. You want it to be as easy as possible. Show up. Like, think about it. If I want to join the basketball team as a high school athlete, I go and I try out, right? And what do you need for basketball? You need basketball shoes, right? That your parents will get you that.
Yeah.
And you need your parents to say yes, I'm okay with you playing basketball, and then you're on the team. And then you do all the things the team does, right? And it's taken care of. If you want to do this in Ultimate Frisbee, right now it's much different, right? You have to go. You have to get your parents to take you. You have to say, hey, I want to go to this tournament. I need this money for this. I need this for that. And, you know, it builds up and can go on. It's just more difficult. So this, we're just talking about a much easier format.
Yeah, with any sport, there's challenge to the parents, right? They got to pick you up after practice. There's always, like, little additional things. I'm thinking about this with my kids. I know it's coming. Beckett's going to be a nightmare. He's going to play everything. I can already see it. It's going to be terrible.
He kicks everything.
He kicks literally all of the things. And I know I have this coming, and there's still a lot of logistical problems for parents, but it's so built into the fabric of the way that school is done and that scholastic sports are done that it would behoove Ultimate to fit into that format. Because if parents can treat Ultimate the same way that they treat track or that they treat cross country or soccer or football or any of the other sports that go on, there is just a normalcy to it that people are used to. And there's programs built around all this stuff. All right, you have practice after school. Well, we have a little bit of an after school place you can hang out until your practice starts at 3 or until your game that starts here. Like, it's all structured for it. Right now, the way that Ultimate is built with these weekend tournament things, that's abnormal. In high school sports, you may play a game on a weekend night, but that's a special game. You know, a lot of times you're playing games during the week. it's fitting into your normal school programming, and then your normal weekend programming is whatever it is with your family or whatever it's done.
And there's huge tournaments in all sports for high school athletes.
Sure.
But they are like big things. Like you're like, you know, John Brogan, his son, who's in college now, John Brogan's a good friend of the MLU. His son is a 6'4", 230-pound pitcher.
Yeah.
So who gets special training from Cole Hamels. So he's a lucky kid, but he's quite the talented athlete. But he has these big tournaments he goes to. They cost money. They're a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like you're sending your kid away because it's a big deal. But right now, the regular season, shall we say, of high school ultimate is these tournaments. So it's like, it doesn't feel like a big deal. It feels like this thing you got to do to play a regular season. As it's taxing on, like you said, it's kind of taxing on the parental mind. Like, oh man, I gotta do all this work on a weekend. Like we're parents now.
Yeah.
It's like the weekend. You see that weekends are, and we're running. We're parents now, and we're running an ultimate frisbee league, which means we know how important a weekend is. To get people to sacrifice a weekend or to do things on a weekend is tough. That is that's their free time. So it's asking a lot, which is much different from coming to watch your kid play 3 p.m. on Wednesday. It's just different.
It's absolutely different. And like you said, tournaments are – it's not that tournaments are a foreign idea in sports in general. It's just that tournaments are an extra a lot of the time. And it's because of all the issues we talked about, because of fields, because of travel, because all this stuff. Tournaments are an extra cost. So you would play your normal season of playing interscholastic single game sort of series, and then you might have a tournament or two that was an add-on to that season. But it was an additional cost, and it was an additional burden. Mm-hmm. And I think that in order, if we're going to make ultimate as accessible as we want it to be, and we want to expand it to the place where schools of all income levels, of all positions, are capable of playing it, we need to look at the format that's been successful for so many other sports for so many years.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And there's obvious. I mean, there's a romanticism to the tournament. People talk all the time about the tournaments we've been to, how much fun they were, and why they love doing it, right? And that's fine. That stuff is still great.
They're right.
And it is fun. Like, going to a tournament is fun. But you also have to realize that it is a privilege to have the kind of free time and free income available to go to a tournament is a privilege. And not everybody has that privilege. We want to take as much of the privilege out of the sport as we can and make it as accommodating and as inclusive as we can.
True. You said it perfectly. Yeah, and I have one more bullet point here, which is fans.
Oh, this is the biggest one for me.
It's funny. It's funny. I don't know if it's the biggest one for me on some level, but on the other level, it is the biggest one.
I get hung up on the cost thing for sure. I want everybody the affordability, but this one is big.
Because this is simple. Tournaments, no one comes to watch. And as we can see, single games get quite a few people to watch. And there is no doubt that the first Ultimate Frisbee game played at a school, the high school, will have more fans watching it than any tournament, any high school tournament probably we've ever seen, right? Because it's just made for it.
Let's go back to the field conversation. If you're going to play a tournament, you're going to go to a big open field somewhere that can accommodate all the teams. There's a reason for it. It's not anyone's fault. There's a reason it takes place. You have a ton of teams. You need a big field, big open space. You cut it all up, and you put teams on it. If you're going to play a single game, you're going to get a nice field at your school, like right near where everybody is. Probably going to have some bleachers, probably someplace for people to sit and watch. It's going to be built to accommodate fans. And the difference between the two is amazing. If you want to engage other people in the sport and you want to let other people in, let other people understand what you're doing, the best thing you can do is put it somewhere that it's easy for them to get, comfortable for them to watch. And a nice high school stadium is the best thing. You know, I remember being in school and playing soccer and being like, talking to my friends, like, I have a game tonight. It starts a half an hour after school is over. You guys going to come out and watch? Like, just come out and watch. It's right there. It's like a 2-minute walk across that grass, and you can come watch us play. And friends would come. Like, people would just come out. They'd come hang out, have a fun time, and get engaged in the sport. And we know how cool Ultimate is. Like, people will get engaged in it, and people will fall in love with it if you introduce them to it. And as a result, more people end up playing it, more people end up funding it, and it grows and grows.
And this has also been done. I went and watched Lower Merion play Radnor. These are two high schools. I think it was Radnor. I can't remember. Lower Merion played somebody. And there were a bunch of parents there because they played. But this was like a, what do they call it? It's not even a friendly. It was like they're just playing. They're scrimmaging.
An exhibition.
And it was like, that's cool. It was great. All these parents were watching. And it was obvious that this should be done more often. And once there becomes a season to it, it just becomes so much more fun. And that would be the last part of this that I think we should say is it's a season. Make a season. Get together a bunch of schools. And that's not hard to do because, again, what's the word I'm looking for? The way to do it's already there. Like, schools already know what's
going to play. The process exists.
Right. Yeah. And you put together a season, and that'd be awesome. I mean, you don't know how happy, well, you do, how happy I would be when I heard that this high school around me was hosting an Ultimate Frisbee game. You know, I would just go.
Absolutely.
I would love that. I am an Ultimate Frisbee fanatic. Like, I would love to go watch the high school play and be like, wow, this game is to get into the finals, or this game is getting to states, or this, oh my God, I can't wait for that. And it's coming. Like, we could see that there's so much more activity that this is what people want. They just, honestly, I don't think people are thinking about it and being presented with it the right way, and that's something we want to be a big part of.
And I want to be clear here, too. This is not a novel idea. Obviously not a novel idea in sports, because everybody plays single game seasons, but it's not even a novel idea in Ultimate. People do this. People are playing single games against one another. They're definitely doing it. It's the competitive structure that isn't currently accommodating single games, right? You can play single games against other schools and enjoy that and have a fun time, but it doesn't build into anything that leads to states or nationals or anything like that. That's all kind of been incorporated into the sort of traditional Ultimate tournament structure. And I think that we're not suggesting anything that's crazy or new. We're simply suggesting that we take this idea that exists in regular scholastic sports and apply it to this sport, which frankly is more accessible, right? Is more accommodating. You don't have pads, you don't have helmets, you don't have exterior equipment like goals or field goal posts or anything. Like, it's a simple sport to play. It's you get a pair of cleats and you can play this game. And that is, I think, the opening of the door. And now what we have to do is build a structure for it to exist in that really allows it to grow, really allows it to build not only participants, but fans.
Fans. There's nothing cooler.
Yeah.
There's nothing cooler. So we would love to hear from you guys out there. You can always tweet at us at Jeff Snader, at Nick Darling, or at Cleats Cufflinks. We'd love to hear from you. And tell us your thoughts. What else can we compare between the tournament style and single games? And, you know, what do you think the ways are that we could and it should be implemented? I'd love to hear the ideas. I just can't wait to see more and more of it.
Absolutely. Cool. And I know that we're not alone, and I think a lot of people are thinking about it this way.
Oh, yeah.
And every kid wants people to come out and watch them play, too. And we think this will add to it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, so we're going to let us move on. We built MLU Fantasy. And by we, I mean not me and not you.
No. Good Lord, no. I mean.
So should we give some shout outs?
Yeah, let's do some shout outs, some MLU Fantasy shout outs.
So our creators, Luke Ryan,
mm-hmm.
who's our head statistician, Tim Brubaker, who we call our tail statistician.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he likes that or not. And then Amanda Kalk, who's our developer. And
yep.
we had some help from a bunch of people on the outside, kind of casually, that really helped us build a framework for everything. But those three were the main components there. And then you did a ton of work on the design and the look and feel. And I think that's where we did come in. We came in on like, how should this actually be? How should it be done?
Yeah, we put our hands in. You put your hands in a lot on the database end. You have a background there. You were helpful there, and then also on the how it should feel to people. And yeah, I got a little involved on the user interface stuff and the front end stuff. But all of that would have mattered.
Right.
Not at all.
Right.
Without anyone to put behind it.
We were involved in the direction, like overall direction of it. But the crew, so our fantasy app from before had one problem that you thought, what you kept saying was the problem, was it's like it has to be head-to-head matchups.
Mm-hmm.
You kept saying head-to-head matchups. The league doesn't matter unless you're playing somebody week to week, which I can remember when we first started, I said that doesn't matter. Like, who cares about head-to-head matchups? And it was so obvious that it matters because if you can't steal a win or if every week doesn't matter, then it doesn't matter. So
yeah, you could see if you were to look at it analytically, you could see engagement over time decrease.
Right.
Week-to-week engagement was a steep decrease because there was no – you couldn't even just win like one week just for pride, even if you're way behind. Like if you missed a couple weeks of – keeping track of your team and keeping it up, you were basically out.
Right.
And then you'd never check back in.
It was just cumulative.
Yeah, because maybe it's best to put that in context, because maybe a lot of people don't know. Our league in previous years was a cumulative points league, meaning you set up a team, and that was your team for the year, and at the end of the year, whoever had the most points won.
Right.
What we've managed to switch to this year is head-to-head matchups, explain.
So I was just going to say, so simply enough, you could have the most points and not win. Because just like in real sports, you can blow out somebody one week and then lose a squeaker the next week and you're 1-1, right? But in this one, if you had a bad week, it didn't matter because it was just an overall thing.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if you just extrapolate things out to an overall, you know, the best team always wins, right? The most stacked team always wins, where even in our league, our fantasy football league, we did as an office, not the best team won, right? Like it was, and we had some upsets, right?
Yeah, it should have been me.
Right, it should have been you, which makes me happy. So I have questions down here for that we put that people want to ask, and people ask us, so why do we build it? We built it because, number one, we wanted to have our own app, our own site. We wanted it to be owned and operated by the MLU so that we could take our vision to where we wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But also, because fantasy sports have outrageous engagement, right?
Yeah. To clarify, why did we build it? Anytime you ask us why we did something in this league, if our answer isn't that it was better for the business, then we're either being insincere or we've lost track of what we're doing.
Right.
And so to be perfectly clear, why did we build fantasy? Yeah, we want fantasy. It's fun. People love it, and it's fun to play, and it makes us feel good in a way. But that had little to do with the decision of why to build it. Why to build it is very much a business decision.
Of course.
Fantasy Ultimate is played by 45 – fantasy sports are played by 45 million people in the United States last year. It's a huge number of people.
I mean, think about it. There's 360 million people in the U.S.? If my math is correct, 300 million of them are babies.
Yeah, and the other, and like 100 million are my grandmother.
Right. Yeah. So the rest of them play fantasy sports.
They do.
Right?
All the rest of them.
Now, we take 45 million people playing fantasy sports. That is an absolute massive. Think about that. That's like all sports fans play this. When you think about it, like so many sports fans play this is really the way to look at it. Because if you told me there were 45 million rabid sports fans in the U.S., I would say that number makes sense to me.
Yeah, I believe
that's
that
a lot of people. And to think that 45 million people are playing it is also not surprising, because March Madness, I'm sure, is considered a fantasy thing too. Everybody plays that. Like, it's so easy to get people to engage in this stuff. So that's why we built it. Number one, it's good for the business because it gives us more engagement to our fans. And gives us more offerings to our fans, allows us to find many different ways to do lots of cool things. And so another question I have here is, what do we expect from it? And that's an answer we can answer over many years. But in year one, what would you say? What are we looking for in year one and from MLU Fantasy?
Well, year one is certainly we call it a beta. Let's be clear about that. Fantasy Ultimate Beta. Because we want to be sure that people understand that this is the introduction of this thing. So, you know, we're going to expect a good number of users. We're going to expect a good amount of engagement. But I think that's the thing that people need to understand. What we really expect over this in the long term is to do our job for us. Our job, in many ways, is to create opportunities to sell our sport to sponsors and to investors. What fantasy does for us is it provides a platform of highly engaged users that we can present to sponsors, and we can marry the two in a way that provides value to both. And what we want the fantasy platform to do this year is set the stage for what we'll do in coming years. So to do that, it has to show users, it has to show engagement, and my Lord, is it already starting to do that?
Yeah. And so, you know, how I would add on to this is fantasy is different than a website. Even though it's a website, it is the most engaging application. To give a comparison here, and I'll look this up for you, the fans out there, so you guys can actually, you know, hear the numbers on it, because it's fun to hear the numbers. I'm going to tell you what the MLU site has done in the past 15 days, right?
Yeah, and this is going to be a comparison, to be clear, of the way engagement works in fantasy.
Right.
Yeah.
So here's the MLU.
I don't know if people know what engagement is, but we'll clarify.
Yeah, okay, so 20 seconds of it. Engagement is who's coming to your site and how do they act while they're on the site. We use analytics tools, which can give us lots of different information. And the information I'm going to go with and I'm going to point out now is how many people come to the MLU site, how many pages do they look at, how much do they click around, and how long do they stay on the MLU site. So in the last 15 days, 11,532 unique people have come to the MLU site.
Yep.
That's a big number.
It's a decent number.
That's cool.
When we look at analytics, we're pretty happy with that.
Okay, that's a lot of people. Those people, those 11,500, viewed almost just a hair under 27,000 pages.
27,000?
So each person looks around about two pages.
Yep.
Think about it that way. They stay on the site for an average duration of 90 seconds. They're coming, finding something, and doing whatever they're doing and leaving.
And again, from an analytics point of view, on a normal website, these are good numbers.
They are numbers
we're happy with.
This is a normal thing for us. And we have a bounce rate of about 50%. Mm-hmm. So it means, bounce rate simply really means that you go to a page and then you leave. So if you go to ML Ultimate and you don't click on any other page and you leave, you close the tab or close your browser, that's considered a bounce. Just terminology. Okay. So it doesn't matter if those are good, bad, or ugly, though they certainly sound good.
Yeah, I'm okay with them.
Let's see what Fantasy has done in the same period of time. Fantasy, in the last 15 days, which, if you'll be reminded, it launched on the 6th.
Yep.
So this is the last 9 days, has had 3,700 users. 3,758 users. They have 75,615 page views. And they stay on the site for 9 minutes.
An average of nine minutes.
So you can see that it just doesn't, it's not your normal website. People click around, they engage, they look at players, they just want to see more and more information. And the bounce rate at the moment is 38%. And it was at some point, as I looked back on other days, it was at like 60%.
Yeah, it's been dropping pretty consistently.
Because now there's more to do. Once you draft and all this, there's more pages. So we're seeing the bounce rate just steadily go down. So it's really not a website at all. It's an application that people can go and do this stuff from. So number one, it's really, really neat. It allows us to do lots of cool engagement with our fans, the people who are using this site. But the other thing, the thing I like most about it, which has implications much deeper into the future, we had a GM meeting here on the East Coast, and we had one on the West Coast, and I did this on each meeting. I asked the East Coast GMs, these are people who live and breathe MLU and their teams, I asked them to name players on the West Coast. And every GM could name a superstar. You know, they could name Morgan Hibbert.
Yeah, name a couple people.
Right?
Yeah.
I said, name more. And they couldn't. Right? They had to think about it. I mean, they could after some time, but they had to think about it. Then I know next year, when we ask the same question, they will rattle them off because of fantasy. Fantasy teaches you who people are in your league. They teach you who's the best player. They teach you who's the person you can count on for certain things. Who's your best defender? They make them all real. And I've experienced this myself. We played fantasy football. I love football. I learned about a whole new set of people I never would have known about because I had a fantasy football team.
Yeah, I played fantasy football. I'm not a big football fan. And now I can hold my own in conversations.
And you also watched more than one game a weekend.
I did. I watched lots of games mainly because of the fantasy thing.
And so you want to, so again, you talk about the business point of view. Well, I know we will directly see the payoffs from making this app in our viewership. Because now the Spinners fan who drafted Topher Davis might just turn on our April 18th stream of that game. Because might as well watch how Topher's doing.
Absolutely.
And I can watch the sports update live or the stats update live.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the thing that fantasy does. Fantasy increases your viewership to all your other content because people need that content as a background of how they're operating their fantasy team. It increases their understanding of the players as individuals and as stars and starts to build up their value in a public sense. And it also very directly affects the bottom line in creating impressions and engagement, which are things that you sell directly to sponsors and to advertisers. It's a huge ad for our company in terms of a business sense. And then in terms of growing our league and growing its viability long term, it's a huge ad because it's building up our personalities and their individual brands as they interact with our fans and as our fans start to rely on them for points when they try to beat their friends.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I just can't wait. And so everyone else knows out there, too, this advance, one of the biggest advances we've made and the team made was doing the live scoring. So last year we didn't get scores up or points up and calculated.
Stats, to be clear. This is real-time statistics, which is a big change.
And we certainly are going to have some delays in there with some issues, but you're not going to see anything like last year where it sometimes didn't have up till Thursday or Friday. These, in many cases, will be updating within 10 minutes of the actual event occurring. Timmy Purston catches a goal, and in 10 minutes you'll see it on the stat line and see how many points he's accruing. That's cool.
Yeah, no, things are going to turn around pretty fast. And it's we've been excited about the statistics side of it for even longer than the fantasy side because really our focus on statistics happened before we even thought we could do fantasy.
Right.
And that's really what drove this. And the idea that we could actually record and transmit relatively real-time statistics, that alone is amazing.
Yeah.
Because keeping track of games all over and writing content about it and understanding how to think, sports is a real-time thing. And you and I differ on this a little bit. You'll rewind a sporting event to see a play again.
Because I'm a normal person.
Yeah, I can't handle it.
I want to see the play.
I only want it live.
It's still alive.
I don't
live.
Want it.
I can just fast forward through a commercial.
No, it's upsetting. It bothers me.
Yeah.
I don't like time travel.
If you watch Back to the Future,
I'm worried I could meet myself. I'm worried I could meet my mother back in time. Maybe we fall in love. Maybe it's weird. I don't want it.
Are you really just reciting Back to the Future?
Yeah,
right now?
I'm just repeating it. Yeah.
All right. Your mother's not Leah Thompson.
No.
How many kids have no idea who Leah Thompson is?
So many kids.
They think that
they're missing out on it.
They have no idea. She was a big deal when we were kids.
Huge
okay?
deal.
All right. Look, we only have about 12 minutes left. So
wow.
I'm just going to end with this and say
we talk a lot.
We do talk a lot, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Ask us more questions about fantasy. We're happy to answer them or anything.
We're going to talk more about fantasy too. No doubt.
Yeah, and we'll come back and we'll give you more updated numbers so you can see how the engagement's going because we love to educate the fans and interact and tell you how things are going. So I want you to take this travel with us. All right. We're going to move on. We're going to finish this off. And we can move through this.
We're going to roll through this.
We're going to roll through it. But people ask us all the time, what are you most proud of? What are the things you like the most? So we figure we do a top five list of top five things we're most pleased with this season and then give you our top five things as of right now of what we want, or our top five wants.
Yeah, we want to prove what we want additionally. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So number one.
This is which one are we?
This is top five. Okay, good.
Yeah, I just want to clarify.
Because I also have top five things that I want to beat you up with. Mm. And that changes dramatically.
I know. It's amazing the variety of things you've threatened to beat me up with over the years.
There's so many tools that could do damage to you.
Yeah.
So I'm glad
you me in front of a truck, throw me off a cliff, drop me down a flight of stairs.
Right. So you're giving them all away. Let's go with top five things we're most proud of.
Mm-hmm.
Number one is season tickets sold this season.
Yeah.
So we have sold 369 season tickets as a league. And that's a really, really great improvement for us over time, and we usually sell the bulk of our tickets the last 5 days before the season starts, before the first game.
Yeah, this week is the big week. And so that's a great lead-in.
Right, so we have 4 home openers this week,
mm-hmm.
3 home openers the next week, and 1 the week after that. So we know that we could potentially double that number.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
And that is really exciting. That is proof that what we're doing is working and that we're getting more and more engaged fans and proud and happy fans, and we're working really hard to make them proud and happy and trying to treat them as best we can. And we've been more and more engaged. And you know, we had Dave Pennypacker, every fan who bought season tickets, he wrote a personalized letter to. And,
his poor hand, very cramped.
Poor hand.
Carpal tunnel.
And
we're getting him treatment.
We'll just put him down when he...
Well, I was told by Lindy that our treatment for carpal tunnel or other hand-related injuries is Tom Levy with a cleaver.
That's
company policy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Less carpal, more tunnel.
Less carpal, more tunnel. that was really good. I enjoyed that. Yeah. Oh my God, we did not script that. I just came right up with that.
Yeah, I got that every now and then. But we all saw just the thanks that fans had. That was cool to know that you care. And so we just care about it. We care about our fans. We care about our sponsors. We care about our people. And, you know, as a young league, you can still do a lot to show them you care. And we were really happy about that. So season tickets. Number 2, MLU Fantasy.
Fantasy. We talked about it already. I'll be honest. Very, very honest. I am incredibly shocked that I sat down last night with my wife's family, not directly, but over the phone and over the computers, and drafted a league called People of the Swamps, because their last name is Desmarais, which means of the swamps. And we drafted.
That's true, by the way.
This is true. And we drafted a league last night, and it was so much fun. The banter back and forth during the draft was very amusing. And a couple of the people in the league having very little idea who any Frisbee player is, trying to figure out who they should be drafting. But we're, you know, they're like, these stats are great, but we're, you know, of course we have a lot of rookies without pass stats. Some complaints about that.
Yeah.
But I didn't think I would be there. I'll be honest.
I didn't think it would be this cool.
Yeah.
I didn't think it would be this cool. I thought we'd do something. I didn't think it'd be this cool. And it scares me how cool it's going to be as it grows. Because
so
the fans get it. Like, this is just the first take.
We're getting to that in the next top 5. Just save it. Save it. We're going to get there.
Number 3 is sponsors and the way we activate them. So I want you to speak about that directly. Because I'll just give some numbers. Last year, I don't know how to put this in the easiest way. We closed more sponsorships dollars in the last 90 days than we closed the previous 2 seasons times 3 or 4.
Yeah, no, that's not even remotely close. Yeah. We unlocked what we needed to do in terms of sponsorship. And I think about this a lot, and I've talked to a couple of the people who work on this stuff pretty directly with me. And I got to be honest, one of the things I'm most happy about is the amount that we've learned. I really feel like I've been through a graduate school in the last couple of years in terms of understanding how to work with other brands, how to work with other companies, how to, you know, engage them initially and then also to activate them on the other side.
Yeah.
And we've come so far, leaps and bounds. And you're right, it's hard to even put it in context how much better we've done. And part of it is sales. Part of it is the sales approach and understanding what people need to hear and want to hear. But the other part is our capability for activation, our ability to put brands in positions where they feel like they're getting the bang for their buck and they're getting the chance to speak to our fans and to engage with our fans in ways that are meaningful, not just like throw an ad up or put a sign up. Like, this is stuff where you get to, as a brand, offer value to our fans. And that's really what we're trying to put together.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't compliment you very often, so I'm not going to start now.
I wouldn't begin at this point. Let's find somebody else to compliment.
Right. So one thing I think people should understand, this is fun for me to look at, is Nick and the team and Johnny Mac have done all these great things, is this is not easy.
No.
That is the – you think I'll get a sponsor. And I can't tell you, I mean, we feel pretty confident in sponsorships now. I mean, we're starting to get good at this. And people will ask me about sponsorships and how to do it. And usually the first thing I tell them is, like, it's just not easy. You don't have a chance. Like, if you don't understand how much work this is not like, hey, pay me a couple dollars and I'll put up a sign. You're never going to close anybody. This is, as you say, activation. This is creating a relationship. This is managing that relationship. This is delivering sales to them. They're not just going to pay you money to not make money. They want to make returns.
Sponsorship is not charity. Sponsorship is literally money for service.
Yeah.
They're paying
it's consulting.
They're paying you for some kind of service. And if you don't deliver on the service side of it, then you're not getting them back.
Yep, and it is hard. So, and as great credit to the business development team, they closed Coca-Cola.
Mm.
And, you know, you could wonder, like, okay, well, what does that mean? And I think I can put this really simply for you. Coca-Cola doesn't put their brand on anything that isn't exactly consistent with their brand. They don't put that Coca-Cola mark on anything because all the great companies protect their brand completely. They want it to. They don't want you to be able to turn around and see Coke poorly displayed somewhere. They want everyone to see it as the huge, awesome, you know, Coca-Cola company that it is. And this deal took months.
Yeah, the obstacle course that was involved in getting Coca-Cola.
Right. Right, the national,
to allow us to use their logo.
Right, the top national manager had to look at this, approve it, and say, yep, yes, Major League Ultimate, that's good for our brand. I approve that. And the Coca-Cola brand sits across the Boston White Caps chest.
Just printed on the Boston White Caps jersey. Just
and
this
it's
past
amazing.
Week. It's beautiful. The lengths we had to go to get that logo there are a reflection on where our brand has come over the last few years. Because they didn't just look at what we were going to present them to. They didn't look at just numbers. They also looked at how consistent is the MOU in their own branding. And can we trust them to be a good, you know, a good caretaker of our brand, yeah, if we lend it to them.
Yep.
And the fact that they were willing to say, yes, we trust these guys with our brand, we trust this league with our brand, that is a huge, huge, huge plus for us going forward. And that is the biggest thing to take away from that deal.
And I'm just really proud of Johnny Mack and Mike Banneker, who did that whole deal. It was outstanding. All right, I got to keep us moving.
Yeah, keep us moving.
And we're going to have to move through
these. We're going to go over time.
Number four is the PAC, the Player Advisory Committee. And short and sweet is, this has just been great. This has brought us closer with the players. Once every 2 weeks, Cody Bjorklund, who's the president of the PAC, and Sean Murray, who is the secretary of the PAC, bring us all together. I'm able to speak directly to the players. They represent the players, their voice. And we get to talk, and they help us advise us on things we're doing. And it's just such a wonderful relationship. And just short and sweet, it's been great.
The thing I like most about the PAC is it's something we talked about for a long time. And then when you finally do it, you're like, man, I wish we had done this earlier.
Yep. So that's fantastic. And again, I want to thank Cody and Sean, who have put in a lot of work on that, and all the members of the PAC.
Great job.
Fantastic. And the last, and I wish we had more time, but you can at least, you know, talk about it a little bit. The app.
Yeah, the mobile app. Yeah, I'm very excited about the fact that we have a mobile application. I think it is actually a bit further along than I thought it would be at this point, which is great. When we got to launch, I felt like we had more features than I thought we might have when we went to launch it. But what I love about it most is it is a starting block that has so much more room for us to do things with. Now that we have this base to start from, we now have a platform from which we can build and just continue to add value. Yeah. And anytime we can start something like that, like fantasy, you know, these places where we can begin things that have an open-ended opportunity, I'm excited about. So if you haven't checked it out, by the way, you can get our mobile app in the iPhone store and in the Google Play store.
Yep.
Right now. So,
so check that out.
Get out there. If you have a Windows phone, well, that's your fault. Yeah, I don't know
someone,
what to say.
Someone
someone reached out to us,
tweeted
though,
at me, and he said, what about the Windows phone app? And I said, well, The bad news is we don't have one. The good news is I finally met someone with a Windows phone.
I think there might be a lot of them. We don't know.
Maybe.
I actually don't know.
I don't know how it works. I don't even know what it means.
I don't know what it is.
Is there actually Windows on it? Like, do you click the start? I don't want to know.
We're out of our element. Yeah,
we're never getting a Windows phone app. Okay? Just go on the website. Get an iPad. Okay, you know what? We're gonna save off the top five once, and we're gonna spin it like this.
Oh, we're gonna leave that.
We're gonna spin it like this. I would like, if the fans out there, tell us your top five once, or just any your top once of the MLU, and see how we line up. So, what do the fans think? What do they want to see us do, and where do they want to see us go in our next episode? We'll talk about many things, and we'll certainly talk about how the home opener went, but we'll also talk about the five things we want to see and that we're most focused on. And you can compare with how the execs think.
Yeah, so get on Twitter or on the emails.
Cleats and Cufflinks at ML Ultimate. Cleats and Cufflinks at MLUltimate.com.
Yep, or at Nick Darling, at Jeff Snader, at Cleats Cufflinks. And tell us, what's your wish list for the future of the MLU? What things do you want to see us develop? What things have we developed that you would like to see better?
Yep.
What personnel would you like to see removed? You know, I have some suggestions.
I know you do.
in general, just let's see how it fits with what our thoughts are, and we'll lay out ours, and then we'll bring up some of your input and see how it fits, see how it all goes.
I like it. And April 18th, we're kicking off the season. I will be out in Portland. You can watch that game live on MLUTV.com. Is that where they go?
No, this would be MLULive.com.
We have too many things
to start with MLU.
Okay. But MLULive.com, you can watch the Stags take on the Seahawks live at 2 p.m.
The Seahawks.
Wow. Seahawks.
That's going to be a crazy game.
It's going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome.
That's going to be crazy.
It's going to be – you have no idea.
Yeah, you don't even know how, you don't know how this is going to go down.
Do you know who's going to win? You know who's going to the Seahawks. I love it. You're right. I said it completely wrong. You're going to see the 49ers.
The Stags will win, but they will leave that field so injured. We'll lose half of them.
Oh, Seahawks.
They'll win.
It makes me
There's
happy.
There's no doubt.
I want you to know, if you hadn't corrected me, I had never – my you brain thought right through it. So the Stags take on the Rainmakers. The Seattle
Rainmakers. Right city.
Live at 2 p.m. Pacific.
2 p.m. Pacific, which would be 5 p.m.
Eastern.
And that'll be on MLULive.com. Mm-hmm. Tune in there. You can watch the game live. We'll have Jeff, you're going to be doing the color commentary on that with Brad out there. He's doing a great job. And then we'll also, of course, have Vancouver headed down to San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And then Boston playing a doubleheader this weekend. They'll hit in Philly first on Saturday. And then they're headed down to D.C. on Sunday. I will be at both of those games.
I envy
if you happen to be out, come say hi to me. Let's chat a little bit. You can tell me exactly what you think about our long rambling podcast shows. And we'll watch some Frisbee.
I can't wait. So we're all excited about the weekend. Thanks for listening. And we'll catch you soon. Nicholas.
Jeffrey.